back, everybody, to just another random episode of Be Better Podcast. The difference here today, Devin, is I've got two computers going. And as much as we have winged our fact-checking, today we are going to fact-check the heck out of our favorite subject.
Facts only.
Facts only. This is a straight fact-check. We're going to deal with reality. We're going to give out a healthy dose of tough love.
I couldn't begin to imagine what you're alluding to. Do you care to introduce me or the podcast that we're doing?
Oh, yeah. So welcome, everybody, to the Be Better Podcast. I was so enamored by Devin's new new business cards. I was actually like looking at it like from an American Psycho standpoint that I was very jealous of the bold raised lettering.
Embossed.
It's got a watermark, dang it. So does this change your kind of like...
Good afternoon, Devin Palmer, MSP Moves at Lake Sotheby's International Realty.
Ooh, that's got a... It almost smells like it's got like a musk to it. Is it like a... Like you know, when you go into like smell like rich Corinthian leather, like this is a picture of a guy that like has dinner with, like, you know.
I smell like Corinthian leather now.
Oh, it is rich Corinthian leather, mahogany, deep mahogany.
New year, new me, Chris.
It is so good. This is a heavyweight card too, by the way. This is a
luxury in your hand, luxury service with your home.
I feel like this is something. It almost is velvety. It feels like the texture on the blue side is like very smooth, like maybe a sample from Crate and Barrel that you might get, like a really nice.
You can paint. Beat that card at Restoration Hardware. You get a free sofa.
Do you really?
No.
Can I color match this to a new room that I want to paint?
Yes, by all means. You go right ahead. I'll send you the hex key.
Look at this. This is so nice. What's it like to be to be over in the big leagues with the big Sotheby's?
I have enjoyed it. It's Sotheby's, not Sotherbees. Oh. There's no R at Sotheby's. Just going to go ahead and amend that now.
Sotheby's, okay.
Our dear mutual friend Sam Tillen is never in the next few years of my real estate career. He will refuse to say Sotheby's without an R or a sequence of U's. So I appreciate the need to mispronounce the word, and I respect it.
Is Sotheby's, is that the... Is
no, but that not, R again.
But isn't that the...
Sotheby's.
Isn't Sotheby's...
Sotheby's. If you raise your pinky, you will pronounce it correctly. Sotheby's.
Do we need to have crumpets and tea now?
Make sure there's enough S duration of your S. Sotheby's.
I'll ask Tim Walton exactly how we're supposed to pronounce this.
Exactly.
But to my point, though, Sotheby's is a
Again with the R.
Listen to my point. It's an auction house in England, isn't it? Aren't they an auction
New York.
House? New York, they're an auction house. They are not the International Realty Group.
Listen here, Christopher.
I'm trying to get to the bottom of it.
Lakes Sotheby's International Realty. Did I say the R? Sotheby's?
I think you said Sotheby's? There sounded like there was an extra S or soft C in there somewhere.
We are the local office of Sotheby's International Realty. It's an independently owned franchise.
Okay. Where are they based internationally?
Internationally would just be, you could just call it New York. But okay. Here we have an office in Edina. That's where I've been going to. We have one up in the North Loop that I'm going to try and pop into as often as I can. We have one out in Wayzata and then one in Stillwater. And then allegedly, and this is a secret, but allegedly one coming within the next couple of years in St. Paul.
Oh, nice. And just...
That's a secret, so please no one mention it.
No one mention it. We'll bleep that out later. When it says lakes, is that referring to the region that we are in?
Yes.
Okay, that's... so.
City of Lakes, Land of 10,000 Lakes, that's us.
What are some of the other ones? Do you know?
They're all just regional names.
Like mountain?
In various states and different markets.
I like it. Is this for me to keep?
That's for you to keep, sir.
All right, well, we will make sure we post that on the front door when we list our house here.
Sir... We'll put a sign in there. You don't need to tape my business card.
Oh, okay. I'm not going to tape it.
Why don't you worry about let me worry about the marketing. Oh,
thank you. Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much. Because you know you will be selling our house.
Yeah,
at
you
point
just
time.
All, sir, all I ask is you scrape some of Soda's poo off the back sidewalk.
Well, eventually I will. Well, or one of the kids will.
So
one of the children will definitely do that. I promise you that. That is my sole solemn promise and to you that by the time we get to selling our house, there shall be no poo left.
I'm going to keep using the MSP Moves moniker because it's such a great... I love that for who I serve because it's so many endurance athletes.
But yeah.
I did make that brokerage move. It's a smaller brokerage. It's a little more boutique feel. That's what I was looking for. So I'm trying it out. It's hard not to say Devin Palmer Remax results because I've said it so many times
so
in the past
fast,
few
so
years.
Many times.
So it doesn't. I'm still training my tongue. Devin Palmer MSB moves at Lake Sotheby's International.
All right. Well, it's going to be. I'm excited for to see how it goes. New year. Congratulations, Devin.
Thanks, sir.
And you're moving on up. Did you notice anything different when you walked in the house today? That I was.
You were mobile.
I was mobile. No crutches.
You were standing on your own 2 feet.
Walking around. I actually rode. I rode the exercise bike today. I rode the Peloton for the first time.
And when you coach an athlete, and they're just coming back to health and fitness as you are, do you say, throw that gear up high and grind it out as you did?
So
you sent me the data and your average cadence was 38. Unacceptable. You're working out of the gate. You got to go gentle.
It doesn't change much. If you go back into my Strava history, that's pretty much my wheelhouse. I'm a minder and a grinder. But what it did do is there was zero tension, and my average of 9 watts was almost double digits. Almost.
How did it feel being back on the bike, moving the legs that way?
It felt good. It's different, right? So I still have to bike with my brace on. That gives me a maximum knee bend of 110 degrees, which normally at the top six or top 12 of a pedal stroke, you're probably compacting more than 110.
So did you have to goof around saddle height?
I had to get the saddle height way up, and so I was towing down a lot more than I would normally have to, and that's just because of just practicality.
Yep.
Now it's about moving and just pumping that leg and getting it over, making sure. So I'm looking in the mirror and I'm watching to make sure my hips stay neutral. I'm not kind of favoring one side, trying to make sure that everything I do is very, very balanced. Like when I'm doing squats or just knee bends, because it's very, very remedial right now. So I am making sure in the mirror that both of my hips are going down equally, not one hip on my strong side just dipping down like that. So those are the things that you have to be aware of, and I have to be kind of hyper focused on. But today it was just about moving. It is what, zero tension, no watts and anything. It's just kind of let's get the blood moving, get the legs moving, and just kind of make sure that knee is kind of pumping, and then got to move the patella around and try and break up some of that scar tissue in the knee and around. So it's very remedial, but it's the beginnings of what will come.
Do enough people have humbled themselves enough and start the way you're starting so gently on your body when they come back from injury or a health thing like you're coming back from?
I think if they're coming back with some guidance, yes.
Yeah.
Because the pitfall is you hurt yourself.
Yep.
And then you just
drag out.
You come back right back. You set yourself back. I have been very proud of the fact that every time I go into PT and we do a test to see like where my flexibility is or where that everything has been a steady progress. You know, I've increased mobility in my knee like by 10 degrees every time I go in, and so I haven't had any setbacks. Knock on wood. Right?
It's such a tricky push-pull of, yeah, I want progress.
Oh, I totally do.
Forward and max out what I can do, but also, body's in a tender state, and you need to respect it.
It is. I don't have any, like fallacies about where I need to be and when.
Yeah.
You know, I want to skate. I want to play hockey by September. I would like to bike this summer.
Yep.
I would like to run maybe sometime around the 4th of July.
Okay.
In all things, if they stay as it will, that'll happen. But like, you know, I'm not an athlete. You know, I look forward to when you and I will go out and bike again outside. Yep. But I need to take, if I don't take the steps to get there, you're not going to. Much like if you have a training program going to an Ironman, right? If you say, well, I'm just gonna go, right?
I'm going to cut to the good
cut
stuff
right to the
when
chase.
It's 16 weeks out,
yep.
The final finishing touches versus the boring 40 weeks.
I'm going to go out and ride 100 miles instead of trying to build yourself up from an endurance standpoint, knowing what the plan is from a cadence and wattage output and in a fueling and hydration plan. If you don't have all the things put together, you're not going to be able to get to the far end. So
yep.
I know where I need to be. I know that's a far, far place from where I'm at right now. So I'm taking the small wins as they come and sharing them with people that I know that aren't going to pressure me I didn't put it on Strava. I could have. I could have put it on Strava, but I didn't. I texted you. I texted my friend Chris Palmquist. I texted one of my old clients, Jared Roy, who is he's a professional cyclocross racer, and he's just coming back from a major knee surgery, and now he's surfing, and so he's been a big help. And so Paul Phillips and all these people that have been very supportive, I have told them what I did, and that's important for me because, you know, I look for support.
Well, I loved getting it because it shows the incremental step you've made, that next jump to, at the most basic level, resuming the activities that you love.
Yeah.
So you've worked hard enough for the past, has it been 8 or 10 weeks now?
It's been 8 weeks since surgery.
So a steady progress of 8 weeks, and now you're back on the saddle.
Yeah, and the saddle exactly was where I'm at. The big things that have, you know, I enjoy getting up and walking without fear.
Yeah.
I enjoy making a cup of coffee and walking it, you know, or being able to do dishes and fold laundry, going up and downstairs. All those little things have been very rewarding. And, you know, you're humbled when you get hurt, especially if you've gone so long in your life like I did without being hurt at all.
Yeah.
I've never broken a bone.
Really?
In my body. Never broken a bone. So this was kind of probably, this is the worst injury outside of my back that I've ever had. And my back was bad, but I didn't have anything where it was surgically repaired.
Yep.
My foot back in the early 2000s was a choice because that was a bone readjustment in my big toe. But this was the biggest
thing. Well, you wouldn't have your very successful foot-based OnlyFans account if you hadn't had that cosmetic surgery on your foot.
Absolutely. I mean, there is a whole hashtag subculture of scars that people get into that has made me a wealthy man. Just an incredibly wealthy man. So
Paulo Bunyan Town on OnlyFans.
Bunyan Scar Town. It's like, hey, how you doing? It's a
Paulo Hammertoe on OnlyFans. It's a very specific niche, but it's quite lucrative.
Oh, let me shave my bunions and see if you can watch that happen. Oh, gross, dude. That is the worst, man. That can never happen.
It's your audience.
It is my audience. Well, it's our audience. You're part of it. Now you're just disassociating. You're disassociating yourself.
I take the pictures at 40% of the money.
Oh god, that's terrible, man. No, it's been good in it, and I am happy, and I feel very blessed that I'm at the point where I'm at, and so. But you know,
stayed true to the just being a little bit better principles
just
of
be better.
This very podcast.
Yep, just be better. You know, there's a whole idea of just being 1% better every time, and that's kind of the whole idea. You don't need to be, you know, you're in your head. You may want to be in a certain spot, but just be better than you were last time.
Yep.
Just be better.
That's all it takes.
Somebody's got to put that in a T-shirt.
We need to do merch.
We should do merch. We have merch. We have a T-shirt.
Where's my cut of the merch? How many have we sold?
I think I gave away more. It's got Mike Ladendorf on the front. He's doing the cyclocross. It's the cover for our thing. It's a whole thing. But it's we don't have merch. We do, but you know, you can nobody.
Does Mike Ladendorf have to get a royalty on that?
No, he's actually got to come on the podcast.
He owes us a visit.
He's going to come when it's episode number 100. I think we're on episode, like, we're in the 80s now, I think.
Okay.
Have you looked up, like, at all lately what our episodes are?
I have not.
I think we're, like, when I was looking the other day, I think we were in the 80s for how many episodes. If you had to guess, what would your guess be for how many episodes we currently sit at on the Be Better podcast?
86.
We are recording right now, episode 83. That's not bad.
Not bad at all.
Not bad for.
Sorry, I'm texting right now, which I typically don't do.
You don't do that. Why are you texting? Who are you texting?
A client, so it's none of your business.
Oh, okay. As we're doing that,
I'm doing business in your neighborhood here, sir. I am selling a home in your neighborhood, off market. We're concluding the inspection period, and we're doing a delicate dance with the final negotiation here.
Well, I appreciate the work you do. Just do it off my dime.
Just off the clock. I get it.
All right, so I am going to bring us to the topic of the day, which was the bold statement that was made by our fortune favors the bold.
Fortune does.
As I did say, fortune favors the bold. As our friend, do you have the text stream up? You should read the text
Allow
stream.
Me.
Devin is going to go, since he's already deep into the texts already here, he's going
we
to
will, And
pull
we are
up.
Not giving the individual in question a voice in the conversation.
No,
is that
no,
correct?
No.
We're not going
to
call
We're not calling him. Heck no. Because then we're just going to hear excuses and all kinds of different things. So are you ready?
I am ready. I have the text in front of me.
Should we do this in like where you're the voice of us and I'm the voice of the person who is doing it?
Yes.
Okay. So hold on.
So this will be a dramatic reading. I will be both hosts here.
Okay. Where are you starting? We're starting with the
Monday at 8:04 p.m. message from.
Okay. Hold on. Okay. Is this?
Do we even have his picture up right now?
We do not have his picture.
That's disrespectful.
I know. Show me which one it is. What's... Okay. I am trying to go back. Oh, it's... Okay, hold on. I'm going way back. Okay. All right. You're going to read... So I will read as our unstated guest.
Guest contributor. Okay, you go ahead.
Question, including short course athletes, what place am I getting in an Olie against every male in the U.S.? I think there's about 20 dudes in the Olie pool that can beat me, and 20 in long course area. So saying top 50, no problem. Blank.
His wife.
Thinks I'm full of S. Said I'm asking Chris.
Seems like a topic for Be Better.
And then Chris says.
Well, I think the short course athletes are...
Oh, is that not your voice? Is that not how you want to be
represented? Unless you ask Jill, that's how I sound.
I think that the short course athletes are not well represented in the media or in the U.S. from a visual perspective. I think you would really need to go to age group nationals to see how you measure up. I would love to see that. I do not want to say top 10, but definitely top 100.
Devin replies.
I reply, easily top 1,000. Chris, when are we recording next? We need to cover this. Chris, what do you say, blank? I think you should do a GNC and prove everyone how strong you are. We could record Friday this week if you'd like. Blank, send us your top 3 results from international discourses over the past 2 years, and we'll do some prognosticating.
And for the record, that person never sent any data over. This is all that was sent. This was all that sent.
Anecdotal data?
Yeah.
Let's call it anecdotal data.
Okay. If I go to age group Nats as an age grouper and not get top 10, I'm surely killing myself. I would say Maple Grove 2022 in Buffalo from that same year. Those are 4 years ago. Clear Lake this year was a heater, but a 2 mile run in replace of a swim.
Chris says, history favors the bold. All right, then I say, Chris, when are we being better next? I want to tackle this topic head on.
And then this person says, so I come in and just argue I'm not an SE athlete, and Devin counters, can't wait.
Not sure if you'll be on the episode or not, to be determined.
LOL, no defense, just prosecution.
Christopher says, Devin, Friday. Blank, settle down. I say, just analysis. I don't have a take. I need to digest the data. Chris will compile to offer insight and analysis.
I have a take. Canadians getting U.S. high performance funding is theft.
Okay, then we go on a different tangent.
And we go on a whole different tangent we're going to go to. So let's go, and we should...
We have a photo of this gentleman
right in front of us. Who's? This is the same photo that he sent in a black and white sign to
us. A sepia. Speaking of luxury printed materials,
and signed it. Thank you for your support, and gave it to us as a Christmas gift a few years back ago. We'll just name his sponsors: Diamond Bikes.
No, not anymore.
Nope, not anymore. Odom Health and Wellness. Odom. Gear West.
I think he just announced that he joined a new team.
Lactigo? What is Lactigo?
Lactigo? I don't know. Is it something lactation or lactic acid?
You can. So his world ranking in the T100 is 336th.
So top 1,000, as I said.
Top 1,000. And his national ranking in the T100, which granted doesn't have any, 38th.
Wasn't there a big kerfuffle at a T100 recently?
There was a big kerfuffle that we will not go into, but okay. It was about some issues there. So this is this person's results here, and we will say what he needed to do. So we're going to go into past
local
results.
Local athlete.
What's that?
Local athlete. Member of the Cool Dad Cycling Club.
Is he really?
Yeah, he had a kid.
Pretty much everybody is, though, isn't it?
If you ride a bike and you have a kid.
So we're going to go to the results here. So we're going to try and parallel to what he would have needed in 2023, because he would have qualified from the 2022 results at Maple Grove and Buffalo. And just from a runtime perspective,
okay,
he would have needed to run the winning time or the winning runtime for that year in the Olympic distance, 21:33 in 2023. This means that probably it was a little bit shorter. So let's go from
Hold on, something's wrong with that time.
This is Atlantic City, so let's go to Atlantic City. So now we're going to go to runtime. Okay, winning runtime 33:44.
Okay. Off of what kind of bike?
Off of a 56:48. And for swimming in 1825 for a 151:40. That was the winning time overall national championship time.
Atlantic City, I would have thought super flat and fast on the bike. I would have almost
ocean
thought
swim. Lots of like it was the bike was very potholeish.
Oh, okay.
And not super fast because it was all super urban. And then the running was on the boardwalk.
Okay.
Second place had a faster bike, but a slower run at 38:30.
Someone got second with a 38. Wow.
Yeah. So
I'm saying that as someone who ran many a 38 when I
played. Third. Now we're gonna stay in the 33s for the next couple. A 34. Eighth place ran a 32:24. So what we see is that our unnamed guest would have had to at least be able to hold down, because I'm guessing that marginal swim not going to come out first pack.
Nope.
So looks like first pack came out 18:25, second pack here came out around 20. So he would have to bike probably in the 56s. Could he do it? Only one guy rode 56. Second guy rode 55, a 57, and everybody else was an hour or more until you get down to 10th, which was.
So that was a really slow ride then.
Yeah, it was, because it was this urban ride. This is in Atlantic
City. A lot of corners and a lot of roads.
Yeah, it's downtown stuff. Yeah. It's terrible. So we're saying that he's going to have to run in the at least in the mid to low 30s.
Because I would see losing
for a 10K off of that strong bike.
If the lead swimmers were low 18s, let's say he can make comfortably, because he races as a pro, so I'm hoping he can comfortably make.
I mean, we're putting that in quotation marks.
Elite. Technically, elite is the more accurate term.
Yes.
From a USAT standpoint. Mm-hmm. Pro, I call myself a pro, but made, $0, so it's hard to call yourself a pro.
Yes.
Professional implies a little cash. Okay, so he's coming out second pack against that field.
Yep.
I would assume he can ride comfortably with that 56 to 58 range of guys, but can he run then, the low 32-33 range if he still had any time to bridge up? Do you think he's able to bridge up to the 18 minute swimmers?
I don't think so.
Did our 18 minute swimmer, you said he rode a 56?
The 18 minute swimmer rode a 56:48 and ran a 33:44 to win in 151:40. That is a 4 minute comfort zone. Second place went 18:52 in the swim, 55:50 on the bike, and 38:30. Third place, 22:04 in the swim, 57:32 on the bike, 33:21 on the run.
Interesting. So this was a pretty spread out field as far as where everyone was strong.
Yeah, I mean, so if you see, it wasn't until sixth place where it went 157:18, and then they were pretty close after that. And even looking down deeper into the results, the 34s are being run still at 29.
Because our guy's going to run a 30 on a great day, run a 33, right? Not an okay day, run more of a 34.
Yep. So it's all going to be.
What did our guy do to win Maple Grove?
What was Maple Grove's triathlon? So this is again in 22, and Maple Grove is. I mean, okay, I'm going to put it out there because it's not the same distance, so it would have to be average speed and pace. His run there, 33:59.
Okay, so he's in the ballpark.
In 2022.
Yeah. He's had a kid since then, which as far as I've experienced having a kid has not sped
up. 4 years. And this was also, so that is the time there. His swim was 20:45.
So let's say it's maybe in line-ish with the second group, or a touch. I mean, an ocean swim's a little slower than a lake swim, right? Yep.
And he wasn't even the fastest biker on the day.
Really?
No. His bike did average, according to stats, 26.9, but second place rode at a 27.6.
So, who was second?
Preston Youngdahl.
Oh.
A young buck, 32 years old, from Plymouth, Minnesota.
That's a pretty badass bike.
And then, but these are not taking into the collegiates. So if we were to take the, this is international. If we were to put the collegiates in here, which they are not in into this, so we don't have the collegiate results here. That's what it would be. So,
I'm going to be honest. The number of times I nailed a strong swim in Olympic, a strong bike, and strong run, it's almost zero where I did A, B, and C well.
Mm-hmm.
Almost always I'd have a killer swim and a great ride and then blow it on the run, or a killer, a couple times, like in Dallas in 2009, I had a fine swim, really a pretty tepid bike, but then the best run I've ever had.
Yeah. So, and on the collegiate side, Kyle Swenson ran a 35.50 that day, but also biked a little bit slower, went 156.45. So,
Kyle's a really nice kid. I think I met
him
that year.
He's a super nice kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was the little brother of Christina Swenson. She was an MJet. She was with
Star.
Yep, she's a local star. Little Spitfire firecracker girl. Doing very well out there. I'm not sure what she's doing. But so the hot take here is I don't think so.
Well, from what we just read, if we're benchmarking apples to apples, I think a top 10 is reasonable.
Yep. It
top
could.
10, there's no guaranteed win. We're not saying.
So these are, he's going top 10 against amateurs.
Yep.
So how does that shake out in?
We would agree that it's, based on what we just saw, top 5, probably top 3 maybe on a killer day. There's no compelling case or guarantee of a top 3 or a win, right?
And also, I'd like to just put out there, with no stats in the last 4 years of where things have gone,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean...
What was the one he said he did a heater on this year?
Where was it? That was a heater. I think it was.
Oh, but it was a fake one because
it was
a
Buffalo.
Because
it was
a...
yeah, it was Buffalo. So they that's what it was. Is they were no, sorry, Clear Lake, which does not sound like it would have had a
2 mile run instead of a swim.
Yeah, so it's not going to happen.
Interesting.
Yeah,
If you look at the rest, because obviously there's very little Olympic distance racing. So it's either the Olympic track people who are going to the Olympics.
Yep.
Or you, if you want to be a pro, you have to go to half Ironman, Ironman.
And yeah.
In the day, I saw the last vestiges of professional international distance racing, non-draft.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Like Craig Alexander winning Lifetime here in Minneapolis in 2005. Through Greg Bennett winning the whole Lifetime Series in 2007. They made great money. They were really competitive races. Greg Bennett made, that was when Brahma Karate was throwing huge piles of cash at
wicked cash
at international distance races with the Lifetime Series. I mean, Greg Bennett that year, because he won all three of them, I think there was a massive bonus on the line. That man made hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars on his results that year. So phenomenal. From that time, it dwindled and dwindled. By the time I left racing altogether, like Lifetime was no longer doing a pro series.
Nope.
Even Lifetime here in Minneapolis, I don't think there was a pro event anymore. So that racing in the 5150 series came and went pretty rapidly within the course of 3 years. The Hy-Vee event, which was so phenomenal for so long, came and went.
They did go, and there was a lot of money that was, it kind of was, it went the way of the dinosaur.
Our guy who races primarily half Ironmans and once in a while will do an Ironman, and then local amateur, or not amateur, but he races the local short course races for fun and interest, we don't have a lot to benchmark against because he'd be racing guys with a different skill set from the Olympic pool, or
yeah,
he's racing other guys from half Ironmans. And
yeah.
If he is racing the same pool of guys from the half Ironmans that he races, he's consistently 15th to 25th-ish
in most of
his events.
And again, I think it's depending on what pool you're putting him against, because he's racing against long-distance course people right now and, getting in the teens.
Yeah.
So if he was to go to AGNC, he's going to be racing shorter course against guys that are either like collegiate guys or professional guys that are racing in the ITU.
And I think it's fair to benchmark him across the board because he sits in that range where he's a normal guy, he's a dad, and he has a normal W-2 job.
Yep.
So he chooses to race in the professional field but doesn't have to rely on it for income.
Correct.
So I'm comfortable benchmarking against amateurs because he has the same lifestyle as them.
Yeah, because it wouldn't be fair to, like, let's benchmark him against, like, a Henry Groff, who, from an ITU standpoint, raced here just recently and, you know, over in Europe, and these guys, or I'm sorry, in Australia, and, you know, ran a 30:44. And
different level.
And looking at that same race,
even
the top seven all ran sub 31. Sub 31 in the 10K.
So even our favorite Minnesota athlete, David Thompson, who was really good at the half Ironman distance, really good at the non-draft international distance.
Yep.
He couldn't quite swim at the Olympic tier of athlete.
Nope.
Great rider in his day on his best days, you know, let's say he could bridge up. But he, too, was stuck in that, call it 32 to 34 range on the run. So if he bridged up to the Olympic-level guys who were faster swimmers, if he bridged up or even attacked them a little bit, they still have a 1 to 3 minute cushion, depending on how fast they run off the
bike. They do, and he knew that. I mean, that was like when you saw his best results at Lifetime, he needed to make a runner on the bike, and that's what he did. You know, when they were heading back west on the parkway coming back from St. Paul, you know, that's where, you know, he knew the course, knew the terrain, was able to make a couple of jumps. That's where he made his time. But never was he able to put enough time in front of these elite runners to be able to make up for it. Because it is the difference between, you know, can you put a monster bike out there and then hold on for the run?
Yeah.
Not many people can do that.
Nope. The challenge of bridging up, if you are with the front pack in the swim and attack them from the jump on the bike, and can be distancing yourself the whole ride, strategically, I think there's more opportunity in a 40K to get the gap you need, let's call it a 1 to 2 minute gap to equalize the run.
Yeah.
But if you're a 20-minute swimmer racing, 17, 18-minute swimmer, so you have at least 2 minutes to bridge up, that's a hard bridge already.
You're
getting to the back of the pack. What do you have, 10? You have a limited time left on the bike, maybe 10K left on the bike. You have to get through the field and then attack the field and put time into them. It's impossible to conceive of him getting in a big enough advantage, you know, because he's a strong biker and he's in line with a solid run, but he's not a 31-minute runner.
No, he's going to need to run a 31 in order to pull it off. I don't...
Because the guy's Dan Hedgecock.
Yep.
You know, when I raced a Dan Hedgecock, I could gap him a little in the swim. If I was doing it right, I would gap a little more on the bike, and then I needed to hold on for dear life and have both of those in my favor to hold him off on the run.
Yep.
Right? And so if he rode well or I didn't do enough on the bike, he was going to catch me mid-run and, you know, it would be lights out. So it's like for our guy to
be able to do that. I think he needs a
better recipe, or he needs to be closer in the swim.
Yeah, he needs to have a better swim, and he probably needs to be stronger on the bike to give him more of a lead, because without that, I mean, he's going to go top 1,000.
Easily top 1,000.
So we're
comfortable with that.
I feel like we're comfortable saying top 1,000. I think he could probably go, I would say top 10.
Yep.
I don't think he's making podium.
So if he's in an international race against all of our...
No, I'm talking about AGNC.
Okay. Oh, okay.
I'm talking about AGNC. Okay. I don't think he makes the podium in AGNC.
So you're putting him fourth to eighth.
I would love to see him go and prove me wrong. There would be nothing that would make me happier than to see him hoist a trophy on the podium at AGNC. That would make me the happiest person on the planet to see that. And if I coached him, then I'm sure I would probably...
Is this a sales pitch? Is this an elaborate sales pitch?
He already runs his own cycling camp or triathlon. Super experienced, you know. But
he does not seem like he would listen to one word you had to say.
No more than you'd ever did.
Exactly. Just another...
No, and so I would love to see it happen. I would love to see that happen. I think it would be an interesting thing. It would be for him. It's a gamble, right? It's a gamble to come back into that pool and say, am I doing myself a disservice by not putting myself in a place where I'm going to feel good about it?
Well, and I told you before we recorded, ego-wise, in my last few years of racing, my ego was at its lowest. 2014, I was having a real bad year.
Yeah.
Because I was my whole life was still racing. I was still technically a professional, air quotes here.
Mm-hmm.
I made $0. I was slower that year. I had one of my first injuries. I dinged my heel in a stupid crash. So I had all these problems, and I lost a lot of confidence. And I had the problem I wonder if our guy has psychologically. I was like, shoot, I have this technical pro status. I'm not sure I could beat Matt Payne right now. I'm not sure I can beat Sean Cooley right now.
Yeah.
If I just go and race him at Manitou. And so it was a real insecurity, or it was just a point of darkness, like, oh my gosh, here I am with this quote unquote status. And I wasn't on my game in the same kind of a way. And it was a real hard thing to manage mentally.
Did you see when you got your pro card that it was a destination, or was it an opportunity to try and up your game to compete at a higher level? Like, or was it like, hey, I got my pro card, I made it?
A little of both. I really had, I don't want to sound snobby, but I did have disdain. I consider myself a C-level pro. A-level pro, champion winning championship races.
Mm-hmm.
B-level pro, contending at championship races and winning regional races.
Okay.
C-level pro, I couldn't win a championship race. I could barely get to a championship race, but I could contend. I couldn't win a regional race, but I could contend at regional races.
Yeah.
I got to lead a couple of pro events. I got to stand on a few pro podiums.
There you go.
So that was my benchmark. I consider myself C-level. D-level being, hey, I got a pro card on a fluke. And
yeah.
I saw over the course of my years, I was sensitive to that because I knew I was at the bottom echelon of this pro field.
Yeah.
I was sensitive, like, oh man, this guy makes me look bad because he got a pro card. He has the same status as me. So because I was in a low status situation and I knew I was vulnerable. I was vulnerable ego-wise at that time. Like, I was more sensitive about it. And I would guess our guy is maybe in a similar position where he's a little sensitive about it.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean,
based on the tone of our discourse, I would say there was a little sensitivity.
I know. I didn't want to just have him come up here and just, you know, be on the defensive the whole time. Because that's not what it is. So let's try and say, if we're going to try and set him up for success.
Yep.
What are the keys for success for Racer X to make it on the podium at AGNC in the current position where he is at as a elite card holding long distance person?
Well, I would say he's had some really nice solid days at half Ironmans,
mm-hmm.
that have yielded 15th to 25th place at professional 70.3s.
Yep.
We've seen him dabble a few two or three Ironmans. I would say they, you know, based on results, they have not been in line with the same level of performance that he does at half.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if instead of being a half guy who drifts up and, you know, hasn't seemed to love or thrive at that next step, why not scale back and say, okay, I'm a dad now. I still work my W-2. Let me pull back on training volume and just really dial in and just crush half a dozen local races and do a couple of national high-end amateur international races.
But what does he have to work on? What are the things he has to do?
You need to be obviously incredibly strong and sharp on the bike. And for him, strategically, he knows he needs to be strong enough to surge out of the gates on the bike to bridge up. And then let's say he really wants to contend in these races, he needs to be surging to bridge up to the better swimmers, and then strong enough to recover for any period of time he wants to ride with them, and then surge again and drop them and gap them.
Yeah.
And then, of course, just be fit enough to do a really strong 32 to 34 minute 10.
Being able to hold on. Yep. I think he needs to, I would ask him to spend more focused time on the swim to set himself up. And he needs to cut probably a minute off of his Olympic distance swim time to eliminate more of that, because it's, even though it is non-drafting, being in visual connection with these athletes, and especially on the bike, which I've seen, especially at AGNC, usually the first three guys are runners.
Yep.
You know, they're making a jaunt out of T1, and they've got a gap, and there's a long distance between the first, second, and third. So he's got to get up there, and he's got to be able to see him. So he's got to get out of the water in time, because otherwise it's going to be, you know, you risk working too hard, not knowing where people are at. You might see like a little cut back and forth.
If the lead group is going to be competent athletes who are going to ride a competent ride, and you need to bridge up to them in 10 or 15K, you need to be putting out huge watts. So if they have a 90-second gap on you and you can shave that down to under a minute, or if they have a 2-minute gap on you out of the water and you can shave that down to 90 seconds or a minute, think of the how much less power you have to drop. You know, if they're all going to be riding at low to mid 300s and he has to suddenly thunder the first 10K at 400 plus watts to bridge up,
that burns a lot of matches.
Averaging 26 and he needs to bridge up in a short period of time, that's a huge anaerobic effort.
It is. And it's hard to come back from that, right? Yep. But the other thing you have to think about is the farther out he gets, the less traffic he has to deal with, the more he can concentrate on just powering forward. There's not a lot of technical turns, so you're not fighting through traffic. You're not moving back and forth. You're not having to worry about crashing. There's a lot of things out there that you don't have to worry about. You can focus on just going, and just putting your head down and driving pure power.
Yep.
So I think the swim needs to would need to come down.
Yep.
To
no
put
question.
Him in the position where he can probably utilize it. He's a strong biker.
Yep.
Okay. Utilize that strength, but he also needs at the other side. He needs to drop that run, and he has to be able to run in, I would say, 33 to 32 consistently any day.
Yep. But think if he sharpens up the swim and is that next step closer to those lead swimmers, and he will have more time to work with at the back half of the bike. If he bridges up and then can put a little distance into them. Say he comes off 45 or a minute up, that's a nice buffer. If he can still run a 33 high off that, well, suddenly they are under the gun. They have to run a 32 to catch it.
Exactly. I mean, that's it, everybody reacts to what's out there. So he's all we're trying to do is we're trying to put him on the podium.
Yep.
And I think that
Be Better is about to become Project Podium.
It is Project Podium.
The Podium Project?
All right.
Is there a way we can not get sued?
Well, we're gonna venture into lawsuit land here because we're gonna pivot off of this one and into the next hot take that was immediately put out there by the same person who had a. Do we want to reread the?
Should we do another dramatic?
Yeah,
reading?
We're gonna do another dramatic reading here. We're gonna start off with the. We're gonna start off with when he said he has a take.
So I'm glad, for the listener, I'm glad we did not give this person, we didn't name him or give him a chance to defend himself or make his own case.
No, but I'm sure the internet will probably flush him out
Okay, he whatever. Says, Canadians getting USAT high performance funding is theft.
And for me, I respond, who is that? Also, blank has sent no data as of yet, which is I was referring to the earlier one.
He did send us one highly redacted screenshot of texts with someone else.
Mm-hmm. It says, I see no fact-checking, only baseless accusations.
So what...
So he responds, there are Canadians on Project Podium? And I say, you threw it out there. You need to do the fact-checking. Again, it was the highly redacted text message with scratch-outs that says... It's the Somalian daycares all over again. And then he says, I'm joking. This is why we didn't say what his name was.
Yep.
And then you say, are there Canadians living amongst us? He replies, but there is two and apparently they pay their own way from what I just learned. I would too versus training alone in Manitoba with the curling team. Very, very heavy accusation. So I reply, so you willingly admit you slandered two honest Canucks just for your own ego. Wow.
I, and this is perhaps showing a little bit of my anti-Commonwealth bias, I rebutted, I'm still open to having them deported, Australians too.
And then he replies, very inclusive of you to include other nations, can't focus on one, not PC. Myself, I said, don't get me started on those egotistical Aussies, Greg Welch, he gone.
Gone.
All right, so there we go.
What a cultural conversation we just had.
There we go. So
I am entitled to have distaste towards Australians because I raced in the zenith of these nasty little Commonwealthers coming over, living 42 deep in one borrowed house in Boulder, and then just dominating all of us in half Ironmans.
They were good.
The Joe Gambleses of the world. God, they were good.
They were the Luke Bells of the world.
The Luke Bells. I wanted them gone.
You just want them so
they
gone.
They were taking my good American job.
If I hadn't had such a heavy crush on Emma Snowsill, I would have jumped all over you for the same reason, but I let it go because...
The diplomacy of Emma Snowsill.
It was that it. And then she just dished her husband for another, you know, American.
Oh.
Or no, a German.
Yeah, she had a husband.
She was on him.
And then married Jan Frodeno.
Yeah, Craig Walton.
Craig Walton.
He was a big wig. He won Lifetime 1 year. And he came with
it. He was
stacked.
He was a swim biker.
Swim biker, and he was a big fella, and was able to hold off on the run. Yep. And apparently he was a little bit of a control freak.
Why don't we send our young athlete just go to a camp with Craig Walton and learn
how to be that guy?
That swim.
No, we're going to send him to be an athlete with Jan Frodeno, because that's who she ended up.
Frodeno.
That's who she ended up with. She's married to Jan Frodeno now.
What a champion!
I know he was. I mean, just he wins. That's all he does.
Oh, he does. He's
just
so
wins,
handsome.
wins all the time, time, time.
He's pretty likable too.
Yeah,
he's German. He's got a very likable disposition.
I know he's like a. He's
again,
like,
not to be insensitive culturally.
He's like an enjoyable Simon Whitfield. You remember who Simon Whitfield was, don't you?
Jan beat the brakes off Simon in the sprint. Simon blew it in 08.
For?
The Olympic win.
Yes.
Simon blew it. Simon started his sprint. You know, the pack was coming into the finish.
Yeah.
Simon sprinted too soon, and Jan was the closer.
But Whitfield, I would say, has, if we're looking at triathlon finishes, Simon Whitfield probably can hold the flag high as having maybe one of the most... the closest contested triathlon finish ever, which was that same year at Hy-Vee.
Oh, yeah.
When they had the dive, when it was four guys diving for the tape. Paul Phillips took the award-winning photo of this right next to Deli Carr, and has those guys, and Simon Whitfield won. I think he won, I think it was like $1 million or $500,000
for
that.
The peak of Hy-Vee, because that would have been 07 leading into the 08 games, was it
leading into it, yeah. And Frodeno is in that photo kind of falling and stumbling forward. So it is such a good, you keep talking, I'm gonna show you what it is, and we're going to call who's in it. It was Simon Whitfield.
What an era that was.
And
it's interesting, so... we talked about, is it Simon Yee from the UK, who's a 206 marathoner now?
Yep.
Like the level of performance of that era, called the mid-2000s, early 2010s, that people, when you were most glued in, when I was racing actively, the people we were in amongst, they were such a step forward from the early 2000s and late 90s. Oh, yeah.
There it is. There's Frodeno, a 2009.
Brad Kayfeld, from also an Australian, another Commonwealth.
Yeah, if you look way, way back there.
Is that Chris Gimmel?
Jared Shoemaker is in there, because this is them coming
out.
This is them all coming out. Shoemaker, that was him in the line. But look at the names. Look at the names. Shoemaker, Gimmel.
Is that Llanos? No, that's Gomez. He was so good.
I know. Javi Gomez. This is before he was kind of had his up and coming. But that was the group coming out of T2. Can you imagine running 1, 2, 3, 4... Six guys deep that all could run 30, maybe sub 30.
Oh, this is 09, though.
That was 09.
So he got his back on that Olympic loss.
That was the big piece there. That was the big one. So that was arguably, you know, so we're talking about Canadians. We got in there, you got a Canadian and an Australian,
a bunch of
Spanish,
if you ask me.
A German, a Kiwi, and a lone American. That's all you had. And then the worst uniform out of all those was the lone American. I know. So, we're not deporting anybody. Nobody's cheating and nobody's getting, like, tax dollars by training with Project Podium down there.
In Colorado Springs.
Well, no, they're down in Arizona.
Oh, they're in Arizona. Okay.
Yeah, they're down in Arizona. So no one's training that are not paying for their own way.
You know, it's so interesting with training groups. Like, the culture of it matters. It makes it so much easier to manage the workload you have to do to be amongst peers. But then I always think about those Brownlee brothers over in the UK.
Yep.
Just running through the drizzly rain, 365 days a year, training their minds out. They train so hard. So it's just interesting. Different people thrive in different scenarios.
And it's true, like, in cycling as well, when you think about how Americans thrive once they go to Europe and start training in the European theater.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's the being away from home, the evacuation of... friends, you know, removing social media from your lifestyle, because there's a lot of things, there's a lot of subcultural things there that have changed. But I mean, if you think about like different countries dominating at certain times, like we talk about how the Aussies in the early 2000s and just before that were very dominant across the board in triathlon, the Germans could make the same argument for cycling.
Yep.
You know, and how they were the Uber bikers, and even in Ironman, the Uber bikers were Germans, you know, in the late 1990s.
Through the early
2010s, true. And now it's the...
I'm thinking of
now the
Sebastian Kienle is like the last of the German Uber bikers, would you say?
Yeah, probably. I can't think of anybody that would be... Yeah, there's really been not been.
Because he's won world titles in Ironman and half Ironman off of the strength of his Uber biking.
Yeah, and I think after him, then it started to become the onslaught of Norwegians and.
Yeah, and the incredible, and again,
what now you get to another country and they're dominating through and everybody's trying to find out what that secret sauce is. Nobody has ever said, hey, the secret sauce is in America. There's got to be a reason for that. What do you think that reason is?
I always think, is it like cultural momentum? Like you think of East Africans with running. I think of the incentive simply, like East Africans with running. If you can win a medium-sized marathon here in the USA and it's 10 to 100K of prize money, it's life-changing money when you get home.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you win a major marathon and it's 100K plus you have some sponsor dollars coming in, it's like, yeah, I can buy property when I get home and I'm almost set for life based off that.
So it's money?
Well, when you have limited economic opportunities wherever you are and then it's such an outsized reward, it's like making it to one of our to NBA or MLB, where it's like, yeah, I can become legitimately wealthy from running, and I have very few other options. You can see why thousands of young athletes pursue it with incredible vigor, and we only see the best and brightest make it over here. But there's thousands and thousands of training ungodly hard back home that will never know their name.
It's true, and it's I think it's just it's a level of commitment suffering that I think the American lifestyle has not yet.
Well, think of the economics. I was a C-level pro, and I could make up to four figures a year. What a great year.
High four figures.
And it's like that.
Mid four figures.
Doesn't even come close to sustaining even a subsistence lifestyle. So it's like, why would you? It just isn't a good bet unless you're really going to make it to the top flight.
Do you think there was anything that could have changed that, though? Would money have changed your outcome?
No, I don't. I think I could have been if I had been a little smarter, Chris, I think I could have hit the B minus level.
But let's say we flooded you. Let's say I flooded you with every financial opportunity you had and you wanted for nothing during that time.
I think I had the genetic talent to maybe be a B minus player. I'm saying if there's more money, there's a wider pool of high skill athletes chasing the dream. So you have a broader pool of talent being serious about pursuing it. So instead of having a few dozen serious people, you have hundreds of serious people, and you catch higher levels of talent, and you have more people striving.
So the bigger net is more money, which pulls in the higher probability of the winning fish.
Yeah, well, look at swimming or running in the USA, like running on the track and field side. Mm-hmm. Look at how elite we are. You know, and especially in sprinting, or look at swimming. Like, there's so many more thousands, hundreds of thousands of really high-end swimmers who just crush it at the NCAA level and then go on to Olympic success.
Yeah, it's a bigger gene pool out there for it. Yeah, it's interesting that it's going to be difficult with triathlon.
Yep, always is going to be. Always has been.
Always will be. That'll be the thing. And I think there are definitely programs out there at USAT that are trying to figure that out, whether it's the creation of the high school program, the club program, whatever it might be. Those are big pieces. I know that even I spoke with one of my clients, two of my clients that live down in Rochester, Bassanisa, they're from the Netherlands. Their son is looking to create a triathlon program at his school in Rochester.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I turned him over to Chad Cunningham and said, I'm not going to be the parent that tells you what to do, but I'm going to give you all the tools so you guys can create your own club. Just like any other thing that succeeds with kids, it has to come from the kid.
Yeah.
It can't come from a parent telling them what to do. The kids have to create it. That's where the fun is. That's where the enjoyment comes. And so I'm excited to see what comes out of that. That would be a really, really fun thing to see down in that Rochester area, because there's not a lot of it out here. Even though, you know, high school would be a good, I think, a realm for triathlon to move into. You see a lot of other sports that the Minnesota State High School League has embraced.
Yep. Certainly mountain biking in the last 10 to 15 years has exploded.
Bass fishing, trap shooting. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. And then not just on top of that, but they have the adaptive sports, like adaptive soccer, adaptive basketball. There's all that stuff out there. So I think it has a spot. It just needs to have more people have to do it. And there is a bigger, I think, barrier financially to it as well because of all the equipment you need, mainly a bike.
Well, it just the complexity of training consistently for it. Okay, I have to get my kid to the pool two or three times a week.
Yeah.
We have to, where do we do the riding? Where do we do the
how
riding?
It sits during the school season.
Yeah.
I mean, think about the collegiate program. Think about like when the collegiates race, their race is like their season kind of begins in August. And that's when their championships are.
Yeah.
At Maple Grove, the regional championships are in August. And it's like, how is that? It's difficult because you can't race and be in school at the same time.
When there's no, you're a high school, elite high school athlete. A few people are going to get a triathlon scholarship, not any boys. Like, there's just not the incentive structure isn't there. Like, you look like what's.
Yeah.
If you're not in the Olympic track, then I have to go win Kona.
Well, I don't think for them to turn to triathlon at the high school level is the answer for creating champions.
No.
I would much rather see them swimming club, running track, and then on a cycling club in the summertime. I think I would
that
much.
Would, that's a good recipe because you cultivate each skill individually.
And you work individually for each one of those, and that gives you the time to devote and dedicate to them. And I think that develops the better program. I think if you just say, I'm going to be a full-time triathlete, I think you're going to create a marginal American athlete that way.
Well, historically, we've always seen our top flight talent was an extreme D1 level collegiate athlete in running or swimming.
Yep.
Who?
We taught to bike.
Yeah. Took
Gwen
well.
Jorgensen.
The Gwens, the Andy Pottses.
Yep.
And rarely was it someone who was ID'd super young.
Yep.
I just feel like if you got into triathlon too young, you never reach the level of swim skill or the level of run ability.
Yeah. Well,
truly level.
And speaking of Andy, I'm going to see him when I go coach at the OP Olympic Paralympic Training Center here in February. So I can ask him about that, like if he has any insight in that.
Stop name dropping famous people we know and get them on the podcast.
I will get Andy
on
the podcast.
Let's get an episode with Andy. Don't mention Andy. Andy.
I'll bring the equipment out. We'll call in to Devin. We'll get Andy in the pod, and we'll have Andy Potts out here. Former Olympian,
just a world champ.
World champ.
He's such a stallion.
Such a nice guy, too.
He was such a stallion for so long.
He's got very nice hair.
And I respected, what I really respected, he went about it his own way, like we were talking about. He was off in his own lane.
Yep.
I think we talked about it the last episode. He was on the copy trainer hardcore from the get-go.
Never rode outside.
So he did things his own way, and he had incredible longevity, and it just seemed like he had that championship mindset of, I do what I do. I know the outcomes I want. I pick my own schedule.
Yep.
I just respect the heck out of that.
Well, let's save those questions and take it to him for the next episode.
Let's take it to him. So this year, this episode, we just really did a deep dive on an unnamed athlete whose photo we have in sepia looking at us.
Who we believe we believe we want to see on the podium at AGNC, but don't believe he would actually do it without our help.
I don't think he's going to.
But hopefully he'll try and prove us wrong. And also, we did walk through our formula for success, and also debunking baseless accusations made by this person who was trying to gaslight on the other side.
But I mean, do we need so many Canadians around?
Yes, we do. In the right sports,
in hockey, keep
yes.
them on the ice.
Absolutely, in hockey, yes, and everything else, absolutely not. So Devin, I am going to put a wrap on this. If you can't smell it yet, but the cookies in the kitchen Julian made before he left for his hockey tournament, and
mm-hmm.
I will send you home with one cookie of your choice.
Wow,
it's good. They have a little bit
of
sea salt on top.
Of my choice.
Of your choice. I'm gonna let you choose which cookie you want to take with you.
I bring you this luxurious business card, and all I get is one cookie.
You get one cookie in exchange for one business card. Yes. There we go. Now, if you made your business card smell like cookies, I might give you two.
Okay.
So we'll give you that. Thank you everybody for listening here to our 83rd episode. We will be back with another great one. If you have any questions or suggestions,
Andy Potts coming up soon.
Andy Potts coming in hot. And before we do that, we're just going to ask Andy to